Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellison with the Digital Education Podcast, where I get the opportunity to interview, talk with educational innovators, but mostly people who've become friends because we get to do the good work together and we have lots in common. So today I'm with a friend, a teacher, founder of Organized Binder, Mitch Weathers. But now Mitch is a newly minted author
Yes, sir.
of the book Executive Functions for Every Classroom, Creating Safe and Predictable Learning Environments for Grades 3 to 12. Now, Mitch, before we jump into the book, what's it feel like to be an author?
Surreal. I think that's the word I keep coming back to after, and I don't know if it's just, when you don't fashion yourself a writer, when you fashion yourself a teacher. And maybe a presenter, trainer. I've definitely worn those hats in the last 2 decades, but definitely not a comfortable space writing. So to have 2 years of work, all of a sudden it's in front of you. It feels, I mean, of course it feels fantastic, but it feels kind of surreal. Kind of like, did that really just happen? So.
I give you credit because I personally love when educators write books, and especially friends of mine, not only to read them, but we as educators, I think oftentimes kind of go into the writing process not seeing ourselves as writers, as authors, or as people who have anything like unique or special to say. And so why would I do this and who would read this? And so number one, thank you for writing. Number two, I think credit to you for working at it and putting out a great book.
Thank
Now,
you.
I want to jump into the book because you and I have talked about in the past, just kind of some of the ideas in the book and especially your work around Organized Binder. But I'm just going to take your definition for executive functions. So executive functions are the mental processes that enable us to plan, focus attention, remember instructions, and juggle multiple tasks successfully. And so when we think about that, and you even boldly say, hey, this is the most important part of like the education process in the book. And so you set that as like, hey, this is first. It's not an and or it's not a, it's not a you got to choose between these two things, but this is almost the foundation to what we're doing. So on the executive function side, I'm really, really interested in the idea of, that idea. I like how you put it. Mental processes that enable us to, and then you list a bunch of things, that allows us to. How did you get interested in executive functioning and how did you become an expert in this? And why is this so essential to the education, the schooling, the learning process?
Yeah, those are all great questions, buddy. I got into this work 20 years ago as a new teacher, perplexed by students who were in my classroom who, first and foremost, almost entirely multi-language learners, kids, many of whom had struggled academically most of their K-12 experience. I'm a high school teacher, so they had all this history they brought to them. But as I got to know them as human beings, they were clearly capable and gifted, and the assets they brought to the classroom just looked a lot different than people that looked like me. I'm a middle class Caucasian Reagan era suburban kid that, every kid had a bike and, all that. I just had a completely different lived experience than my students. And I recognized early on, like, oh, you don't know how to do school. Like, you don't know how to do this thing. You can. And how do we figure out how to leverage what you bring to the classroom and not view it through a deficit lens and rather see it as an asset? And I didn't have the language, executive functioning, or any of that. I just started trying to figure that piece out? Like, what has kind of like what you know, when you look at John Hattie's work of visible learning and the effect size and all that, like, he's asking one question, like, what helps students be successful? And let's just do those things. Why not just focus on that? And I obviously was a brand new or newly classroom teacher, 2 years, 3 years in. And I think there was some naivete there that it was like, well, if I can't draw a connection between my students beginning to succeed and what I'm doing or we're doing, then I'm just not going to do it. And I just started throwing things out and trying new things. And from that kind of place, this program Organized Binder started to evolve, which in its core, this is kind of, this book is not an Organized Binder manual. It's not a promotion for that program. It's trying to distill the strategies inherent to that program. So you can do these without these materials, right? It makes it a lot easier on the teacher if you have these materials. But just figuring out a way for my students to be successful. And now looking back, what I created was, first of all, it was all about the environment. I shaped the classroom environment to be far more predictable. And by virtue of engaging in that predictable routine, students were getting practice with these executive functioning skills. So I wasn't teaching them. I at the time wouldn't call myself a expert in executive functioning. It just became part of how we just the rhythm of the day. I like to point out our Waldorf friends, the Waldorf community are really big on the rhythm and routine, that predictability, like just how we do things. And if by virtue of participating in that as a learning community, and in a middle and high school, or even an elementary space shared in other classrooms, so we're not so siloed, students can really start to pick up these skills. And the third piece is modeling it for them. So how I became a quote unquote expert, you might be the first one to have ever called me that. So I'll put that on my resume now because Eric said it. But that's one of the things too that you probably saw in the book, because I'm very upfront about, I absolutely believe after 20 plus years of doing this work that this is the foundation for learning. But it's not a it's an order of operations. It's just you do this first and this second, but there's a problem there. And that if I'm a fifth grade teacher and I want to get to this work around executive functioning skills because I know my students need it, in particular post-pandemic classrooms, all of that. But I got to teach fifth grade. So how do I make it primary and then I can't spend all of September just teaching executive functioning skills. And so although I make that claim, the whole point is to do it in conjunction with what I'm learning or what I'm teaching as a teacher, and that's where the routine comes in. So
Well,
that answer your questions.
it does, and it's great because part of it is that personal story of I think about with a lot of your work here and a lot of what you've written in the book. I see myself as a young teacher in many ways because I was the student that maybe had a deficit in these executive functioning skills, because of, and you identify like most kids get this at home, right? And so I grew up in a situation where the expectation was you got this stuff at home and you just came to school and you did school, right? You did learning. And it took me getting into college to work with an advisor in college who took the time to teach me these things and to prepare me so I could be successful in college. And there's a whole story, but then to itself. But then when I walked into the classroom as a student teacher, I worked with a teacher who set these essential kind of details. That you even go through, the whole I that was the first time as a teacher I started using the agenda, right? And it was the first time as a teacher I started using a binder system. It was the first time as a teacher, and so I saw all these things that then began to create, and you talk about the clarity, the routine, and the modeling, that this just becomes the rhythm undergirding the learning that allows for for, and I think about it in some ways. I like some of this. It allows for the brain in some ways to become more efficient and more effective because you're managing of all of the stuff that goes with this becomes simplified. It doesn't become simple, it becomes simplified and it becomes consistent. And one of the things that I was thinking about as I was reading your book, it's the issue of clarity. And I'm wondering over time, and I've watched education and I've changed and I've got questions. Where did maybe we become unclear in our education or in our schools or in our system about some of the skills that, we maybe just expected, or were we never clear about this as itself? I wonder, I hop back and forth between those things is like, did we lose something that was once clear, or did we just never have it? And now, because of other aspects and other challenges, we've got to become significantly, create the clarity that we need.
Right. And yet still do the job I'm hired to do, which is teach fifth grade or seventh grade math or what, that's a fascinating question well, first of all, anybody listening that's interested, I think read my book. Speaking of clarity, I think you'll find some clarity, but also pick up Lisa Delpit's book. It's now like a classic, I think, in my mind, it certainly is, called Other People's Children. And I quote her in the book, the whole idea of being explicit, that which is implied in the classroom, or implicit, which is where we make assumptions. Like, I just assumed you knew what it means to be on time, or know how to get and stay organized, or know how to manage. I just assume that's all implicit, and we need to make it explicit. And I think, to poke at that question a little more, I'm more curious with you. I'm not sure these were ever collectively modeled for students and talked about. I mean, I get it, where we are so content testing and even sometimes technology focused, but that's what we're hired to do, right? We're to teach content standards and curriculum. So I don't know if that was ever a case. It's just those. When I say collectively, I mean back to Hattie, collective teacher efficacy, and like we know that routinely is at the top of the list in terms of moving the needle. But this work is very rarely collective. When it is, it's like a it's amazing. I've experienced it working with schools with organized binder, but it's more siloed. Like your experience in that classroom, and it's like, oh, of course. Right, but it's not collective. And I think there is a notion, and I'm curious, I'll ask you this, Eric, where if you made it through successfully, and let's say no one modeled it for you, right? Or even these little hints. I talk about this with the time and task management chapter with the agenda, and I kind of poke fun at my parents for giving me a day runner for my 13th birthday. And but then as I've grown and worked in education, I realized, well, what did that signal for me as a 13-year-old? It was a disappointing gift, of course. But think about what that one difference is. What if no one ever did that? Then I just didn't have that experience. So I wonder if by dumb luck and people's lived experiences, and we can look along socioeconomic and ethnic and racial, and there's a lot of lines there, right, that we can dive into. But if I was made it through, well, I made it through, so why would I spend any time teaching you these things? We're going to learn algebra here in ninth grade, or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? That kind of, you often hear it joked about in college, like, well, you're in college now, you just got to know how to do this. And we work with colleges as well, and they're like, if they just knew how to keep a calendar and could unpack the syllabus, they'd be far more likely to be successful, right? It's a time and task management skill, not can I do the content. So I don't know if there was ever clarity collectively. I do think this work that I'm trying to unpack in the book and organized binder is pretty unique. We could talk about that for a long time. So, yeah, I think it's a great question. And here's the thing, and I try to make this point loud and clear in the book: we can't afford to make that mistake any longer. And if the pandemic has put an exclamation point on anything, It's that we need to figure out how to incorporate these skills and habits so that students start to develop that agency in their learning.
Well, now I find it interesting because I go back to even before the pandemic, where I know a lot of schools were like, we needed an executive functioning class, right? Where we need to teach these skills. And I think I think you'd be of the mindset of just be purposeful and interweave them
Has to be.
into, like you're saying, that fifth grade class, or for me, that freshman world history class, or the senior civics class. And hopefully it looks a little different along the way because of the maturity and because of the skill set that's developing. But that's like one of the biggest things I think in education that I always find fascinating. And I think your book kind of hits on it, and your ideas hit on it. It's like, this is not something we need to do separate from the learning, separate from the classroom. It's something that should be interwoven into our rhythms, our processes, our systems that allow the learning to become more effective and efficient, and for these skills to allow kind of the mental, conceptual, creative learning to really take off.
And it, there's a reason my book doesn't say how to teach executive functioning skills, but I say that a lot, in interviews or in talks I give. And then like if you were at a talk I was given, I would put a slide up that I'm talking about teaching these and what they are, and then I put a big slide up that says they're not actually taught. They're best learned when students clearly, there's the clarity piece, see them modeled and get daily practice employing them in a no stakes way. If I mess it up, that's okay. It's a daily routine. We're going to practice it again tomorrow and I'm going to model it, but it's all done within just these steps of a daily routine that, first of all, make for more predictable learning environments, which are safer. And when students consistently feel safer, they're more likely to take risks that are inherent to learning. So there's a lot going on when we create this predictability. And don't forget that many students' lives outside of school are anything but predictable and may skew towards chaotic. And I keep coming back to this as a teacher. I'm empathetic because it's like I got a job to do, and it's not teach executive functioning skills. And you alluded to it, and I kind of go after it pretty hard in the book and say, like, well, what's more engaging, a unit or a lesson on the importance of goal setting and how you goal set and how it can impact your life? Or let's set goals in my ninth grade world history class, or in my seventh grade math class, or in my fifth grade, and then create an actionable daily task, and I'm going to have that, and you're going to hold me accountable, and so is your family. And now all of a sudden it's messy, and it's there's progress or there's not, and it's okay either way, but we're doing this thing, right? My mom's a retired teacher. She's turning 80 this year, and she read the book, of course. She's my biggest fan, and said she texted me and she's like, oh my gosh, I just read the goal setting chapter, and like, here I am, like I love setting goal. I'm getting so much out of this, and I'm not even teaching anymore. This isn't just for teachers, this is for everybody, which is the point of these, executive functioning skills. So yeah, I get contacted, it's not uncommon to get contacted by a school or district and say, we need a curriculum for executive functioning. And I always tell them, no. Well, first of all, that you've contacted the wrong person. And second of all, please don't do that. Just embed this work in a class that maybe it's ninth grade English, and we know that almost every kid on campus is going to take that. So if you want to expose kids to these skills, embed it in there in the context of what I'm learning. Like, what's that look like? Because putting it in a curriculum, let's just admit, and I say this in the book, an SEL. And I've even told schools and districts, hey, and they're like, but we have a mandate, we have to have a curriculum. And I said, well, this works content agnostic, any grade level, any subject. But if find something and I'll review it for you and try to help you out. And they never can really find anything that's engaging. And I caution them. I'm like, I bet I can tell you where you're going to embed this curriculum. It's going to be in a homeroom or an advisory or advocacy, some type of support class that all kids have, like a homeroom check-in. And let's just be honest, kids already perceive those classes as not real classes, not real school. So you're already, even if it is a fantastic curriculum, but they're just not, it's repetition, man. It's routine, and just getting practice in a no stakes way is powerful.
And this is maybe, as you build on this work and as you do this work with teachers and schools around the country in particular, one of the things that I realize, like I think people would oftentimes go to the rhythms, the routines, the predictability that you talk about. The predictability that we create, and then they're like, well, that's boring. Right. And I'm of the mindset, or I'm of the experience too, that it creates a little bit of the box for the fun to happen. It sets up a little bit of, like, if you want to use the sandbox analogy, it sets up the sandbox and a little bit of the rules of the play of the sandbox and the predictability of the sandbox. So that then the creation and the creative kind of nature of what we ultimately want to see in our classrooms just flourishes. And I think a lot of people, like, will look at this and say, oh, it's, like when you're doing these things or you're creating these rhythms or predictability, you're creating a boring system, or you're limiting students, or all of these types of things. But talk to, like, how you've seen it, or how it comes alive, that this actually allows you, and I think going back to that foundation, it actually allows you to set in place the parameters so that then creativity and the fun stuff that we really love as teachers actually takes off.
I tell teachers, great point, by the way, Eric. I tell teachers all the time, like, even in a collective implementation of this work. So let's just stick with our middle school, and I'm going from class to class to class, and the rhythm, the routine is the same, right? First of all, significant cognitive load reduction. So I have more capacity, and you alluded to this, to even just focus and engage, right? So there's a significant classroom management issue reduction when we get into this predictability and shared routine. But what I tell teachers all the time is be as creative, stand on your head. Go, I'm a science teacher. We could go outside. I was the teacher who would drop watermelons off the gym, and we would light things on fire in class with labs, and we'd cut open frogs. I mean, be as engaging as you can, of course. And that's that whole idea of bringing your curriculum to life, your grade level, your curriculum. Just never mess with the routine, because that predictable classroom space feels safer. And when I feel safe and it's okay to fail, or failure is even celebrated, now I can get wildly creative. And open up, and the Krashen's effective filter comes down, and all that is, I believe, predicated on this predictability. So it's not a straitjacket of sorts at all. And if you're listening to this and that's what you were thinking, read this book, because another thing is, I'm just kind of unpacking the last 20 years of my experience as an educator. I'm not, there's nothing new I'm trying to propose here. This has been proven, and I would love for you to consider that idea of collective teacher efficacy through a shared predictable routine, which significantly reduces cognitive load. So I have more capacity, more working memory capacity to do the work of learning. So I'm more likely to be successful and feel good and engage. We all, But even if you are trying to do something really creative, let's just be honest. If all of your students, and dare I say, maybe you as a teacher, are horribly disorganized, it's just not going to be as successful. If your kids are just stuffing stuff in their backpack, I mean, all these, tried and true scenarios that we see in classrooms anywhere you go, this country or beyond, all that work, lesson planning, all that creativity you hope to, it's just going to be less successful if, at a minimum, students aren't organized. So.
Well, and I think With technology and especially the smartphone, it's made it exponentially more difficult. Because in the past, you'd be able to see that student who just you just knew their stuff and everything in their backpack, and it's like, oh Lord, like stop, let me help you, let me show you something. Or that kid that had the binder that like you check the binder and like everything's just out of sorts and out of order, and you're able to sit next to that student and help them get organized and say, hey, how come you did this, or how come you did that, or where's the disconnect? I think now, in a lot of ways, and maybe this is the last question, is like, how do you think of, I was a forerunner in the use of, and probably wrongly so, tablets in the classroom, tablets in the learning environment. I think now I'd just go back to all old-fashioned technology, paper, pen, binders, and just, paper reading, or whatever it is that you needed. It was like tangible and was handy. I think the smartphone, the tablets, the laptops have even made it more difficult to identify the successful, or to even model the successful, skills that are needed for this. And so how do you think about, maybe this is a way to end, is like, how do you think about that technology issue, knowing that you also are a virtual, you've taught classes virtually for years, and that you're not, in many ways, you've never been, a Luddite that says, hey, we don't use technology. It's how do you think about technology and executive functioning, is maybe my question.
Yeah, it's a good question, and one I get a lot of because it organized binder. It's this physical color-coded tactile thing. And back to this, it's not an either or thing. And you're right. I've established this predictable routine in a fully online, asynchronous, self-paced, independent study high school program and watched students be wildly more successful and create. I mean, so it's all digital, but they had a physical binder where they're writing their goals down, which research encouraged. Their daily reflections are written down. The time, and what's your weekly plan? What's your daily plan? All of that's in this organized binder. But we're interfacing and using all kinds of digital tools. And a good friend of mine says it's the right tool for the job. It's not to say no technology. There's never been a tool in human history for information recall like the internet. It's just a fact. So to try to pretend and move away from that's silly. But Tom Bennett is a guy, kind of founder, director of ResearchEd, familiar with that program, really cool, organization. But I quote him saying, he says, if I had to choose one thing in the classroom to impede learning, it would look like a mobile phone. Like if I had to pick one thing that would most significantly impede learning, it would look like a mobile phone. And I think we just have to start being honest about that. It's not, again, it's not to say either or. It's saying, how do we blend these in a way that I believe this analog tool is a technology. I believe, and I say this all the time, that all education technology doesn't have to have a screen, right? And people have said, well, why don't you make Organized Minder an app? I'm like, because that's totally counterintuitive to the point. An app, which are great things, do stuff for us. Take GPS, for example. I make this point in the book. Like, who wouldn't live? It's fantastic technology, right? But we don't want this just done for students, right? Like, and let's make no mistake, you alluded to this too. Google Classroom, schools, whatever it might be, Canvas can just be the digital version of the book bag. And the great thing about the book bag is it's the big red flag. Whoa, why are you stuffing all that in the book bag? That goes behind your table of contents. That's number five. Like, we can model these things and have it blended. So I'm the first person to say, like, it's you got to figure out the right tool for the job. But all of us, when given a device, whatever it might be, if we have access to anything else, apps, social, the internet, 15, 20 minutes, I mean, it could just be a massive distraction. So just figuring out the right tool for the job, I think, is what's most important.
Love it. I love it. So, Mitch, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
You can go best way. Well, just email me, mitch@organizebinder.com. That's my personal email. If not, go to organizebinder.com and just submit a contact form. That's pretty common where people that's for some reason that one's easier to remember than mitch@organizebinder.com. That would be the most personal way, and I would love to hear from anybody out there listening. The book's now on Amazon. I'm really proud. It just came out this month. And it hit number one, which was just floored me. And there's some really cool reviews being left by people. I don't even know, some friends, yourself included, have left wonderful reviews. But to see some from people I don't know is pretty humbling. So check it out
Right,
there. You can
man.
also get the book at Organized Binder, and everyone that comes through there, I personally sign and send to you. So that's kind of fun if you're interested. So.
Well, I love it, and I'm sharing it out with friends and connecting, and it's just it's been a great and it has been a great conversation tool, and it will be a great conversation tool as we, in many ways, get better at our work in the classroom. So, Mitch, thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Super fun to be with you, Eric.